In between my last talk and this section, I've been told that this isn't clear enough and I went too fast. So let's backtrack a bit and just review what we covered. And to do that, I'm going to start by not just referring to Colossians, but reading you the section that I have in mind. Jesus Christ is the image of the invisible God, the firstborn over all creation. For by him all things were created, things in heaven and on earth, visible and invisible. Whether thrones or powers, rulers, authorities, all things were created by him and for him. He is before all things, and in him all things hang together. I referred to that earlier when I quoted Wilfred Sellers as saying that philosophy is about how all things, in the most general sense of things, hang together, in the widest sense of hang together. And here you have him anticipated by 2,000 years. It's Jesus Christ in whom all things hang together. So this is the section that I was pointing to. It's not the only place in Scripture that says God created everything. Many of them repeat it, but they don't. No other place says visible or invisible, so as to convey that there are no exceptions. Because the theology that we're going to contrast with two lines of Christian thinking, the first one, which I tried to describe last time and I'm reviewing now, is going to take that seriously and say that God has created everything, visible or not. And that includes the laws that govern creation, it includes powers and all sorts of things, as Paul says, and it also includes those characteristics which make up the divine nature as we know it, the nature of God. God's attributes are also, as Calvin says, found in creation, and hence are not what the uncreated originating being of God is, they're what God has become toward us. But when we say has become, I'm warned against a misunderstanding, it doesn't mean that God, there ever was a time God didn't have that property or that attribute. God has called time into existence as well. So for all time, he has had, does have, and will have the characteristics he reveals to make up his nature in relation to us. The second section that I quoted, referred to, was in Proverbs 8. And there, here Proverbs says, wisdom is speaking in the Proverbs, and I, wisdom, dwell together with prudence. I possess knowledge and discretion. To fear the Lord is to hate evil. I hate pride and arrogance. And it goes on. So lots of things, characteristics are included in this. The Lord brought me forth as the first of his works. Before his deeds of old, I was appointed from eternity, from the beginning, before the world began. When there were no oceans, I was given birth. When there were no springs abounding with water, before the mountains were settled in place, before the hills, I was given birth. Before he made the earth or its fields or the dust of the world, I was there when he set the heavens in place, when he marked out the horizon on the face of the deep. Then I was the craftsman at his side. I was filled with delight day after day. And then I was delighting in mankind. Powerful stuff. But the people who want to say that God's attributes must be uncreated because he is, are going to have to realize that that what Proverbs says, they have to claim is false. No advocate of the opposing theology would ever consider writing that God had created his own wisdom. And that's the contrast that I'm trying to draw here. So we have first this older tradition in theology that says God's attributes, the characteristics he reveals himself to have, are all relational. They're in relation to us. So the things that God brought about, he brought it about that he has these characteristics. But then he's always had them for all time. It's not that he didn't have them and then begins to have them. That's not the only thing create can mean. It can also mean depends on God. Thomas Aquinas made that point one time when he said, even if the universe were everlasting, there never was time it didn't exist, it would be everlastingly dependent on God. So it would still be God's creation. So that's the way I'm talking about these attributes. The theology that opposes this, which is the one you most likely already know, and we all pick up in church and Sunday school, is the one that is dominant in Western Christianity, both Roman Catholic and Protestant. And I'm going to explain that theology and then draw the contrast between the two, because it turns out that depending on which of those views of God's nature that you hold, on the one view, Christian philosophy makes sense and it's a needed project. On the other view, it doesn't make any sense and it's denied. I started this course by reading for you from Father Copleston, who took that second view. Remember when I read that? He said there's no more a Christian philosophy than there is a Christian mathematics or biology. And I'm going to argue that there are all three, and or ought to be. So that's the way, the reason for going into all this, and and I hope it's clearer this time. Maybe it will become really clear only when I sketch the other theology and then contrast the two. So if it still isn't quite clear to you, hang in there, and when I get to the other one, we'll make the contrast, and by that time I think you'll see it.